This is Catherine Peckett with the U.S. Geological Survey. Welcome to National Pollinator Week. It's been celebrated since 2007 by proclamation of the Secretary of Agriculture and a unanimous vote of the U.S. Senate. This podcast today is one in a series of podcasts being brought to you by the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign, of which the U.S. Geological Survey is a partner. NAPSE includes more than 125 public and private organizations across Mexico, Canada, and the United States who've all partnered because there is direct evidence, according to the National Academy of Sciences and other authorities, that some species of pollinators have declined. And of course, we rely on pollinators such as bees, butterflies, moths, beetles, birds, bats, and others to help reproduce 80% of our flowering plants and about one-third of our human food crops. Today, I talk with Lori Adams, Executive Director of NAPSE, to find out more about the organization and its work to conserve the pollinators of the North American continent. How and why did NAPSE start?
The history of NAPSE is one of great collaboration between private industry, government agencies, scientists, interested individuals, and it started about 1996 when the founders of NAPSE responded to what they felt was a real need for increased dialogue amongst all the stakeholders who could influence and could understand pollinator issues.
You don't just focus on honeybees, I understand, but also on native pollinators. Is that correct?
From the very beginning, NAPSE has focused on all pollinators, not just the prolific and vital honeybee, Apis mellifera. We've looked at every pollinator that exists in North America, and that was another one of our main objectives, was to unite the main countries of North America in a movement that would really protect migratory corridors as well as habitat and really anticipate any problems that were at that point undiscovered. We've not only been able to bring a spotlight to the issue of pollinators, we've been able to affect legislative changes, outreach programs, curricula. We've been able to engage different entities that were never involved in pollinator issues before. What we want to do is pollinate existing programs.
How has the status of pollinators changed since NAPSE started? And is there reason for the public and for land managers to be concerned?
Well, one of the very first NAPSE projects was to engage the National Academy of Sciences to develop an NRC study on the status of pollinators, because frankly, one of the real issues is the lack of information about pollinators and their status. We went to the academies and said this must include all pollinators, bats, birds, beetles, flies, all kinds of non-Apis pollinators, but also all of the native bees as well as Apis mellifera, so that we could have an understanding of, this is the seminal document now that everyone turns to. It's the recommendations from that academy study, the NRC study, are really what we're basing many of our activities now in NAPSE.
Can you give some examples of some of the activities you all have done?
We are instituting eco-regional guides that will help everyone from farmers and ranchers to home gardeners to public land managers determine what they need to do to create habitat within their own habitat. And just that fact in itself, helping people understand that they live in a habitat, is one of the big objectives. When we talk about thinking globally and acting locally, oftentimes people think we're talking about their street, their neighborhood, their town, even their city or state. But in fact, what we're talking about is the ecosystem in which they live. And taking care of that ecosystem helps the biodiversity where they live, and it helps globally because healthy ecosystems connect to other healthy ecosystems. For example, they may think they live in Arizona and New Mexico and Texas when in fact they live in the Chihuahuan Desert Province, or they may think they live in Maryland, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Virginia, but they really live in the central Appalachian broadleaf forest.
What are some of the other activities that you all are working on?
A number of projects that have already taken place, for example, were the postage stamps that were issued by the U.S. Postal Service last year called Pollination, a wonderful example of outreach that was beautiful, educational, and reached an audience beyond the NAPSE partnership. Another of our projects has been Honeybee Health, and many people have really become much more aware of honeybees as a result of colony collapse disorder and the problems that beekeepers and farmers are facing starting in 2006, but also 2007, and now we're finding in 2008 as well with disappearances of honeybees. People are curious about how you go about researching such an intricate and interlocking problem as CCD. Another one of the aspects that we're working on, the curriculum, Nature's Partners is a fabulous, again, free resource for anyone who wants to go on pollinator.org and look under useful resources. Nature's Partners is a 5-unit curriculum that's largely designed for informal education, but certainly would be perfect for the classroom as well, with interactive exercises and a full explanation not just of why pollinators are important, but the process of pollination and how it works in nature and the kinds of things that humans can do to increase the efficacy and the proliferation of pollinators.
Could you explain a little bit about pollinator corridors and why they're important?
Pollinator corridors are important for two reasons. The first is that there are migratory pollinators. Everyone pretty much knows of the poster child for migrating pollinators, which is the monarch butterfly. And as they go through their migration, really from the north to the south and back, they are several generations that need to have habitat along the way to get the fuel and the nesting sites that are hosts for them along their journey. This migration is something precious and something we need to maintain. So we can't think about habitat in isolation. We need to think about it as something that is contiguous and has the ability to sustain large populations as they migrate. But in addition to that, normal pollinators who don't necessarily go south for the winter also need special places where they can move around. And corridors provide these little transit lanes where they can get the food, where they can get the nesting sites that they need to build their brood and to reproduce. Native pollinators require native habitat, and many of these ground nesting, wood nesting pollinators, there are 4,000 species of bees, for example, in the United States. They require this habitat that show us there are significant benefits to having buffers that nurture native pollinators. It can also give us other avenues to provide pollination services for farmers. And the third reason is pollination services are not just for commercial agriculture. Our wild areas need to be pollinated as well, and the flowering plants in forests and wildlands certainly need to have native pollinators that are there to provide that service for nature. So we want to do all we can to create these healthy habitat that influence wild and commercial properties.
Are there any other projects that NAPSE is doing that you want to mention?
Some of the important projects that we're working on for Pollinator Week in particular are a pollinator wheel, which takes the National Academy of Sciences information and makes it very accessible to school children as well as adults. It's very colorful and interesting, as well as a beautiful poster that has really a way of stretching your mind around more bees than just Apis mellifera. It features six different bees that are native bees They're different bees. Some are used commercially in agriculture. They are in beautiful renderings done by Steve Buchanan, who's the same artist who did the stamps that were featured by the U.S. Postal Service. So this is an exquisite artist who has done a remarkable job of creating the bounty of bees. It really shows the banquet of different food products that we have come to rely on from all kinds of bees. And these foods that are illustrated in the poster are the kinds of foods that give us the nutrients that we have now come to realize are so important to our health and well-being. We have a new task force that we're starting this coming year on pesticides. We'll be working with the EPA to take a look at, again, some of the suggestions that came from the NRC study, but also from the USDA Colony Collapse Disorder Steering Committee Action Plan. We will be, again, talking about monarch monitoring and making sure that we help create these way stations through our association with Monarch Watch, but also through our federal partners and also our nonprofit NGO partners are all working together to make these monarch way stations available as the migration that we want to protect continues. I want to emphasize that NAFSE is a collaborative body, and everything that I've talked about today has been done as the result of this incredible voluntary effort of people coming together from 120 different organizations, and that's even growing each year. We bring all these stakeholders together with one idea, and that is to make sure that pollinators, something largely overlooked for many years, become more prominent in our thinking as we manage land. And I think that is inspirational. The exciting part about pollinators, you can create a welcoming environment and it can change the world. If you plant them, they will come.
Thank you for tuning in. Please listen tomorrow for the second in our series of pollinator podcasts. Today's program is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, a partner of the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign, which is managed by the Pollinator Partnership. For a complete list of all podcasts, plus pollinator-friendly resources, nationwide events, and free products, visit the Pollinator Partnership at pollinator.org. That's pollinator.org. Thank you.